the disruptors. They've caused havoc for everybody in the world, and provided some awesome new businesses over the last decade or so. We've seen ride hailing emerge as a great global trend. We've seen the concept of Airbnb massively disrupt the hotel sector. And they've caused carnage for many industries, and they've laughed in the face of the misery of their competitors. They've said they're outdated, they're old, they deserve to be disrupted, they deserve to be challenged. That's what they have said, and now themselves facing huge problems of their own. And the big question, Colin Cullis, our Business Unusual correspondent, is this the disruption of the disruptors?
The short answer, I think, is yes. It'd be very hard for them to consider this as business as usual. And I thought it would be interesting to have a look at what we've typically regarded as disruptive businesses and whether or not they're going to be more robust or able to withstand the likes of this kind of disruption. I think the first thing we can say, though, is what we called disruption in the past, we really didn't have a very good benchmark. A pandemic is what you can use as the new benchmark for actual disruption. So for any other companies that are going to want to wear a mantle of disruptor for this century, certainly a lot of people will say, sure, but what will you do during a pandemic? I can also just mention that Uber was the first subject we covered for Business Unusual 5-odd years ago.
What?
And it remains.
How long has it been?
Yep.
Jeez.
Yeah, 5 years. I'm past toddler age now, Bruce, since you first told me, go and find out what's going on with all these crazy businesses causing drama in the world. And they remain a fascinating story for the development. Both of these companies kind of grew out of frustration. In the case of Uber, the founders wanted to rent a limousine and found it very onerous to do so. And for the Airbnb founders, there was a conference in the city they were in, and there were so little available rooms. And they wondered how many people are just living in the city that could make a room available, earn a little extra cash, and do something with that. So it was out of, I won't say desperation, but certainly out of frustration that the two companies were created. And they've given us what is often referred to as the sharing trust or the gig economies, allowing people who have got a product or a service but don't need to use it all the time, and using technology, allow them to connect with people who want it but only on a short-term basis. And that has been phenomenally successful. We didn't realize how convenient it would be to hail a cab when you just have to press a button, or to go and visit somewhere else in the world by viewing thousands and thousands of listings for where you could stay, and living actually in someone's home, really getting a sense of the city that you're visiting. And in that sense, Uber has done over 5 billion trips so far, and that's probably not an outdated figure. So that's 5 out of the 7 billion of us on the planet would have been able to have taken a trip in an Uber car at some point. They have 20,000 odd employees. They're operating in most of the world's markets, although after a decade or so, some of those markets they've withdrawn from thanks to the fierce competition and all sorts of scandals, some of their own doing, some of local regulators just thinking they're being far too disruptive. And Airbnb, over 100 million users and bookings available in over 60,000 cities. And most recently, adding in additional things for Airbnb, they've started building actual hotels. They wouldn't necessarily want you to describe them as hotels, but effectively they're units that are set up specifically for Airbnb rentals. They do experiences. So when you go and visit one of these rooms or people's homes somewhere in the world, you can also then, you know, book an experience to go and visit some local spot or eat food and do things of that nature. While Uber has been even more extensive with their growth, the Uber Eats, so food delivery services, logistics, a whole bunch of different sort of taxi services besides the regular ride hailing, and even autonomous driving. And so up until that point, everything was looking hunky-dory. In fact, there was anniversaries always coming up now that Uber listed last year. It wasn't necessarily the best listing in the world because Uber has yet to be profitable, and that's obviously a thing when you're looking to invest in a company. But they did list. They didn't do terribly badly. They were valued originally over $100 billion, managed to get a listing for about half that. And really got whacked in March when the U.S. lockdown was enforced, because that is their principal operating market. It has since recovered, and it's kind of at the similar levels to what it was mid last year. That remains to be seen. Tomorrow is when they do their quarterly announcements, and we'll get a sense to see how much has been done, has been lost. I've heard some predictions that say as much as 40% of revenue gone in the last couple of months. Similarly, Airbnb, their plan was to list later this year, and it was looking kind of good. Airbnb, unlike Uber, had managed to plot a path to profitability that actually turned a couple of profits for some quarters. But I think under the circumstances, having an IPO this year is looking to be very bad. And that is thanks to the actual disruption, the COVID-19. And so this is a look to see what they've done since and what potentially they may be able to do for the recovery, because the comparison, I suppose, we have is companies like Uber and Airbnb, which are these, you know, Uber, the transport company that own no cars, and Airbnb, the hotel group with not a single room. Because they don't have those fixed asset things they've got to maintain during a period like this versus a hotel group or, let's say, an airline, which have very expensive assets they do need to maintain. And if they're not actually in the air or being rented out, means they're not generating any income. And so on that basis, I suppose, despite Uber having said that they will be cutting about as much as 20% of their workforce, and Airbnb saying up to 25% of their workforce, they are probably positions that, should things improve, when they improve, they could bring them back into the business and simply start them all up again. That's not to say it's going to be quite so much easier for the hosts or the drivers who have become dependent to a large degree on that income and what's going to happen as a consequence. For both companies, and I think here in South Africa specifically, because they're very popular here, the companies have at least set out quite a lot of detail about how they could be supporting either the drivers or the hosts. Unfortunately, though, despite the best efforts, there's not much really they can do. If they're not earning any revenue, they can't kind of give it to you. So while Uber is still operating, they are assisting with ensuring their drivers keep their cars clean and supply them actually with sort of an offset cost to be able to do that. They will provide the drivers with a cover fee or amount of money that will be allocated to them if they do test positive. This was certainly something that came about a significant bit of pressure in the U.S., although in the U.S., given their challenges with testing, many drivers there are finding it hard to be able to get tested to prove that they qualify for the compensation. Hopefully in South Africa, that's a little easier. I'm not aware of too many drivers that have tested positive and whether or not they're getting that, but at least that is a policy that should be in place here as well. And for hosts in South Africa, all of the listings are available. It's Airbnb simply just tells you, look, please adhere to your local country's sort of rules. And they do list the entire planet. If you want to find out what the lockdown conditions are for anywhere in the world, Airbnb is a good place to go and find out what they are, because they do list all of South Africa's disaster management regulations and things like that. But what they are doing is they're saying for first responders, healthcare workers, and certainly places like Australia, for example, they've actually had healthcare workers move out of their family homes and take up accommodation in hotels or Airbnbs where there's nobody else present, making them safer and also putting them much closer to work. Uber as well has said that they will assist with healthcare workers needing to move about. Certainly as public transport has been sort of shut down, Uber drivers are effectively becoming quite a big help for moving healthcare workers around. But still, that is a tiny fraction of the amount of, on the volume of work that they would have done, which is now missing. Although Uber, if you look at some of its competitors, Lyft, they're actually giving their results today. They only have the riding stuff, so only the taxi services. Uber does have Uber Eats, which is pretty much a global operation. There's some markets they've recently decided to withdraw from, principally on the basis that they couldn't or were unlikely to be able to get any dominance in it, and so they're withdrawing. But nevertheless, at least it is still some income, and it is some people that can remain
in South Africa with food deliveries allowed from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m., with a bit of leeway just after 7, you get a sense that there's a little bit of life coming back in there. I don't know if it's enough to create anything sustainable, but at least it's coming off the worst levels. And that's a little bit of optimism to come through for people in the gig economy, because gig economy gigs seemed like such a good idea in the good times. You don't have a boss. You work for yourself. You can do 100 different things on any given day, whatever you want in your time when you want to. How awesome is that freedom? But unfortunately, with that great level of freedom, comes an enormous amount of personal exposure, because invariably you don't have the right insurances in place because they're very expensive. You don't have the protections that somebody in a real job or in a full-time job, an office job might have. And that's really hard.
Yeah, and possibly some other pressures, in some cases, you say terrible reason for having the pressure, but a pressure nevertheless that will turn out to be a good thing, is despite South Africa sort of having rules at the moment against opening up e-commerce to any great degree, as our levels sort of drop, I'm pretty sure they will. And that'll be a massive impetus, not just to build on what was already a pretty good growth rate that South Africa's got for home deliveries, et cetera, but it'll certainly supercharge it. And so we will probably become a lot more reliable on those sorts of deliveries and become a lot more dependent on them and open up a new sector for more people to get involved in actual deliveries. And on the flip side of that, you can imagine with Ubers, if they were autonomous already, Uber has been working for quite so many years on making their cars autonomous. But there must be a lot of people thinking, man, if only the cars were autonomous already, we could send them out. They could be constantly driving and know that you don't have any transmission, because as long as nobody else is in the car with you and you kind of give it a clean down every now and then, it's a pretty safe way to go. And so it might turn out that this is actually going to be something that helps spur autonomous vehicles, certainly for that kind of public use, just a little bit more.
It's astonishing when you look through the opportunities in crisis and the opportunities that are being sort of increasingly becoming apparent. I mean, initially there's this short, sharp shock effect and everybody goes into hyperventilation and panic. And then as things sort of settle in and people get used to a new kind of normal and get used to a digital economy and are forced into that digital economy through circumstance rather than, you know, through any deliberate genius of their own, they're going, oh, this could work. I don't have to be stuck in traffic. I can sit at home and I can operate and function at 80, 90% of my previous capacity. And if I have to take a bit of a wage cut, so what? Because my expenses have plummeted. I don't have to wear fancy office clothes every single day. I don't have to sit in the traffic. I have 2.5-3 hours a day more in my life than I did before. And that's a lovely theory. I mean, I've never worked harder in my life, but it's astonishing, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, another sort of spin-off is the Airbnb experiences. They were simply looking to tag on something extra. Once you've arrived at the destination, try booking yourself something. So you might go on a tour somewhere and do whatever else. Now, that, of course, has dried up. But there have been, I won't say this is terribly innovative because we discussed video conferencing, but this is the two coming together. So a lot of those tour guides are now using that experiences platform, and Airbnb is promoting it, to allow you to sort of book a tour. There's a fascinating one that's been done in Prague, and you pay your $12, whatever it is, and the local tour guide, it will take you on a tour of the old city of Prague and explain to you what would have happened during the plague in medieval times. And the difference from it being sort of like a documentary that you'd simply watch is that at different parts of the video, he will pause the video, then take questions, answer some things. And besides you simply having the one-on-one interaction with the person you're chatting to, of course, you're on the Zoom call with people from around the world offering different, you know, questions and possibly insights, etc. So whether you're cooking some new dish you've never tried before with a woman who's actually in Italy and will show you how to make the best sauce, or there's a South African who's takes you for shark diving, not obviously physically, but he will tell you about the great whites and how they operate on the coast of the country here. And because it's a lot more immersive, you're actually getting to ask questions, and he talks about the environment and the animals themselves and how it all fits together. It's sort of a wonderful potential alternative to your sort of Netflix binge. You can now go and go crazy with these sort of experiences that you can do online. So for every crisis, there's usually something kind of positive that does come out of it. And hopefully this is, as you said, a short shop sort of thing. But even if it isn't, at least there will be some new normals that we come out with. And thanks to some kinds of technology and some of these companies that exist already, hopefully things won't be as bad as they could be.
You see, now I'm quite keen on going there on that virtual walking tour of Prague. And I'm very keen to buy a Czech Budvar and then to sit at home and go on this virtual walk and drink my Czech Budvar. But I can't buy the Czech Budvar.
Oh, yes, there's no solution for that one.
Brahman. I could find something bitter and lick it, I suppose, while I watch the virtual tour. It's not the same, you know. Yeah, but it'll come back. It'll come back. Colin Cullis, Business Unusual, this evening on The Money Show.